Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible, make a playlist, and maybe talk about other things too. I'm Matt Cato, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
Matt, I was really excited to talk to you this week because I had a whole sort of like joke improv situation set up where I was going to make a big deal about how finally podcast hosts are getting vaccines. Because oh, yeah. I believe in the past week you and I received our first dose. You still got the Band-Aid?
I do.
It's been a while, Matt. Then we both got our vaccines, and that was going to be really fun and lighthearted, and I was really looking forward to making those jokes. I was also looking forward, Matt, to talking about the cover art I made for last week's episode that I was really proud of. I don't know if you've seen it.
It was ambitious. It took me a minute. I was like, wait, why is there someone? Oh my gosh. That was my thought process.
Took one of the classic photos of us outside of the Button Willow Cattle Company in Button Willow, California. And Insta Alpha, there was a lot of colors there, Matt. That took a lot of work. I put it in Pages, went to 400% view to try to pick out. There was a fence to pick out the colors in between it so that our figures that look somewhat like engaged in fighting could be placed separately on the roof of Taylor Swift's Grammy set house lodge.
Yeah.
I wanted to be to joke about that and make fun things, Matt. But the world sucks, and so we can't do those things. I haven't yet been able to talk about, I don't think we've talked about on the podcast yet, the riots that happened in Boulder. Have I talked about that on the pod?
Yeah, I can't remember. I don't know.
I was going to talk about it with Will, but then it didn't really fit. And then last week we went like, let's go super lighthearted with like the Grammy talk down. I haven't been able to talk about riots that happened in my town. And then things got even worse this week. I was away. This is spring break for the local school district, which affects the preschool where my daughter goes. So we were doing a little bit of vacation stuff. And when we were skiing, that's what we do. And when I got done skiing, I saw an article that I was half reading on my phone while I was driving. I don't recommend driving and reading stuff on your phone about a shooting that had happened in Boulder. And by the time I got back to the Airbnb where we were staying, I got to hear some of the scale of what was happening. Surely, dear listener, you have heard about this in the news, that on Monday afternoon, 10 people were shot at a King Supers, which is a grocery store chain, and at one here in Boulder. It was in a neighborhood where lots of students live. It's a grocery store where lots of students shop. It sucks a lot, man. It sucks a lot. So I found out about it. I got back to the Airbnb, and the thing that was particularly painful about it is that when we found out about what was happening, we didn't know what was happening. I don't know how closely you were following it, Matt, but or our listeners were following it, but there was, I mean, it was must have been around 3 o'clock when it happened, and it was not until 7 or 8, 9 o'clock that night that they had any details, really, on what happened. We didn't know how many people had died, if people had died, how many people had been injured for hours and hours. So the thing that I did when I got back was I got in touch with Megan, who's our program assistant, and we took our big list of all the students in our universe and kind of cut them in half. We divided them in half and tried to reach out to make sure and find out that everyone was just safe. And that took a while. As you might imagine, my phone started blowing up with people checking on me. And it took probably like a full hour or so before we were able to hear back from everybody. That was a super painful hour. Especially kind of towards, as you get towards the end of the list, you've only got a couple of people that you're waiting on. You haven't heard from them. And, mm-hmm. you know, a thing I think we've talked about on the podcast before is that one of the bummer sorts of things of being a pastor is that you start to expect bad news, because that's what happens. That's when people call you up and want to have coffee, typically that's something not awesome is happening. It's not a draft day party, you know. They're pretty far, few and far between. Very, I mean, so it's just this super painful, like, hour of being reminded how important my particular community is to me, by, for an hour or so, having them taken away, you know. And that obviously is just my kind of limited world, you know, and we've talked about that with students as well, because all the things you feel in the aftermath of this stuff, it's easy to feel like that's a bad way to feel. Like, like I'm glad that my students are all okay, right? And it's easy.
Right. Yeah.
It's just a step or two, and you're kind of mental gymnastics away from, like, what does that mean that I, like, don't care as much about the people who did die? So it became this really long day and night. They did the thing they kept. There was going to be a press conference at 5:30, and that got pushed to 6, and then 6:30, and then they had a press conference, and then, understandably but super frustratingly, it was they didn't say anything at the press conference. They didn't say whether anyone had died, how many people had died. They just said, like, the investigation was ongoing, and that they're going to let it take its course and give you updates when they had updates. And a theme of Christianity, of life, is that, you know, all I really wanted in that moment was some certainty. What was it that had happened, and what, so that we could do work and start dealing with it. But it was the announcement that you have to keep living and the uncertainty. Later on that night, you know, we found out that 10 people had been shot to death. No one was injured outside of the folks who died. And again, I don't know if that's good news or not, but that no students at the university died. But again, a neighborhood where lots of them live, and a store where lots of them shop, super affected by that. We had a vigil online that St. Aidan's did that I got to be in our, you know, through our relationship with St. Aidan's, got to be a part of that. And then we've had one, the thing that makes it even, like, oh gosh, all the things, you know, it's all the things stacked on top of each other of how terrible a year this has been for college students, period. And from a ministry thing, like, my super depressing take on this year is that the needs of students has never been greater, and our ability to meet those needs has never been less. Because lots of the tools, our best tools are not, we don't get to use. And that's incredibly true now, because, I mean, the thing that we would normally do, right, in the wake of a disastrous sort of thing is some sort of, like, mass or large gathering, because there is power in those ritual actions and your ability to just be present and not have to do stuff and to be affected by that is really important, and we can't do that, really. You know, we had some meetings with folks from the university, and we're not going to have a, like, big on-campus sort of thing. So we did we turned one of our, like, weekly Zooms into a place to check in, and it was good, you know, processing with students. We were worried that how, I mean, people being fully present on Zoom and vulnerable and stuff has been an issue for 12 months. But students really did show up, took advantage of it. It was good. It wasn't what we needed or wanted necessarily, but it was good. We've got there is going to be, I'm interested to see what it looks like. The group Moms Demand Action, around gun violence is putting on a vigil tonight. That's somewhat in person. So I'm going to be at that tonight. So they're, as a community event, that's happening. There's no parking. The logistics of it are interesting, but yeah, so super terrible, heavy week, man.
Yeah. No, it sounds like it. And thanks for walking us through what that experience is like, from that immediate aftermath to that initial processing. And now I'm sure, you know, we'll continue to reverberate in different ways, right? What's that look like a week, a month, 6 months from now? Yeah.
I lament that we won't. One of our synod's current catchphrase is church becoming. And I'll confess, I have not had the real interest to like dig into why that is the thing that we're doing right now. But sure, I'm fine. Okay with that. One of the realities, though, that I've reflected upon recently is that in order for the church to become what it might be, it has to cease to be what it was. You know, there's going to be some death in this resurrection. And that's a reality that we live into in campus ministry so intensely because the community is always becoming, but also becoming undone. And so this whole year of not being able to do the work of the kind of healing work that needs to happen after a year of pandemic, after all the other things that have happened, and then this on top of that, it's work we're going to do with people who are around, but it's work that we're not going to be able to. This community won't be able to do that work because this community won't ever be able to gather again, because come May, it's over. And that's, if I ever have anything, I have many things to say to the wider church, but one of my refrains to the wider church, the things that I wish the wider church could appreciate, is the intensity of the work that comes with knowing that there's a timeline, you know, and that this community is only going to be around for a while, and we can't kick it around in committees and task forces for years and years, because this community is going to go away. And I don't know that the wider church always recognizes that there's a timeline there's a shelf life to that community as well.
Yeah. Well, and you would think the church would be particularly good at recognizing timelines, since every year we say, remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return. This is all limited. You'd think we would have an especially acute recognition of that, you know? I mean, I know it's like especially acute with campus ministry, but you'd think we would in general have this sense of like, yeah. But I think it gets to, I mean, you talked a little bit about this. I think there are limitations, and you do what you can do. I mean, when you talk about like reaching out to your students, but then, you know, feeling guilty about what about these 10 people that actually died, there is a call to, I mean, that's your call, right? To care for the people that you are called to serve, and that you are in proximity to, and you start there, and then, yeah, now you're going to go to this vigil tonight. I mean, you move out from there, but you do have to care for those that have been placed in your care in some way, right? So that's part of finitude, too. Not that we don't keep pushing, but I think, yeah. Well, it's, I don't know how this, I don't know how this ties in, but it feels, life is not always liturgical, but it does feel like it. You know, here you started by saying, I wanted to talk about all these light things. And even last week, you're like, well, we're going to talk about these light things, even though these really serious things happened. And it's just, it feels like that is, it's been the story of the year. Maybe that's just the story of the world always. But this sense of heaviness, and then the lightning from those storm clouds strikes individual communities, and it struck yours. But it's always there. And then where do we find that light in the midst of it? Seems like Holy Week is a time for entering into some of those things. I'm also struck, I just, right before getting on this podcast, I got the new hymnal, All Creation Sings, that Adam was texting about. He was going to send some stuff from it, and I opened it up, and there is like a full page of a lament for
holy crap,
gun violence.
Man.
And you're just like, I cannot believe that we need a full page of lament for gun violence, and yet here it is. And we did need it.
So here's... I
haven't read it, so yeah. Maybe it's terrible, but I'm just saying, like, the idea that
here
it
you
exists,
go, right?
You know.
So one of the things that stuck in my head growing up is there's this old story there's a house on top of the hill out, you know, in Cat Square, North Carolina, where my family is from. And it's the house that my great-great-grandfather and his family built when they ran away from the boll weevil in Georgia and migrated to North Carolina. And I have really vivid memories of that house because it had lightning rods all over the top of the house. Because one of my great-great-uncles, or I don't know how to do the math, he was struck by lightning on the back porch of that house and died. And you said, Matt, that lightning struck in Boulder.
It was a metaphor I was making up on the spot.
So it was a metaphor you're making up on the spot. No way am I attacking your metaphor. But it only works as a metaphor as if you can understand our country as a country where we have stuck lightning rods freaking everywhere to attract lightning, because you can do that. It's worth... Yeah. I mean...
In
the city of Boulder, right? Like, it's it's lots of things. I've got plenty of places to critique it and stuff. But you know, we passed our own like assault rifle ban that got overturned, and who knows whether that would have made any that it got re, you know, it got overturned 6 days before the shooting, whether that would have affected it, right? But our inability to affect, like, we have tried to protect our own community, and we're unable to. To do so, because of all the things that I take for granted that our listeners are smart enough to understand how much bullshit the gun industry and gun violence is. The thing I do want to lift up and give thanks for, Matt, are, you know, I've received tons of messages, and 99.95% of them have been very supportive, and I'm deeply appreciative of all of those. But we had that prayer vigil that night, and I got asked to do like a blessing at the end, and I'm up at a condo with no resources, right? So I texted you and our friend of the pod, Adam, to help me out, and you guys were fantastic in sending me screenshots and taking pictures of lots of different resources. And again, my mind was blown. I mean, I was not surprised. I was glad that it existed because it was helpful, right? Like, that's how sorry a situation it is that, like, oh, thank God we have something for prayers of lament after acts of gun violence. I ended up using a kind of modified part of it because, I mean, you modify everything to fit your situation. We still didn't know so much that some of the stuff assumed had some kind of like implicit assumptions about what had happened. It was great. You know, it got evidently, it got picked up by, Morning Edition, you know, not how I wanted to be on NPR, but, you all were fantastic as well. And were really helpful that night.
Well, I'm glad I could take a picture of something.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, making a difference.
Now, you didn't have, maybe you had to send me a picture, you know, but you didn't have to do it with that, like, iPhone X thing where it's, like, in 3D, but you did. You went the extra step, and you, like, held the hymnal. I could see, like, around the hymnal.
Yeah, you know, I do what I can. Do what I can. Well, thanks for the, I'm glad we took time for that, that testimony, and just talking about what happened. So thanks for sharing that on the pod. And I imagine that'll shape how we look at the text for Easter.
If I may attempt a segue, Matt.
Yeah.
Some old pastor wisdom. I don't remember who told it to me, so I don't want to attribute it to anybody, right? Is that, the point of funerals is that they always like come at a bad time. They interrupt everything. And that's like the point of a funeral, is to interrupt everything. Certainly this week has been interrupted. May Holy Week be such an interruption as well.
Amen. Well, as we dive into Holy Week, I see that you have prepared the Easter texts here. Do you want to... should we just talk about those? Should we zoom in? Ooh, I will share. Can I share a little bit about Holy Week?
I didn't feel like I needed. I checked at the. I went through the texts and I was like, "Oh yeah, Maundy Thursday is the same every year. Good Friday is the same." Right. We actually kind of talked about Good Friday last week. I'm fine with those. I'll just stick these in here so I can look at these.
Yeah, agreed. So I'll cover. Let me cover them in this way, which is to say that I've been continuing to teach my children the stories of the Bible through the Holy Moly Not Mini Golf television series.
Have you seen it yet?
But the Spark. I have not. The Spark House series. Spark House, come be a sponsor. And we got to Holy Week, and it is. It's incredible. I mean, I feel like there's a children's sermon. Dialogue going on in my home that no one gets to witness, and maybe it's better that way. but we just watched the Maundy Thursday video, and Jesus gets taken away by these soldiers right in the little video, and Maya's like, wonder how his friends are gonna save him. Because they keep watching all these, like, hero stories, right? Like, that's what happens in all the hero stories, or the prince and princess stories. There's always, like, somebody comes and all the friends come together and they save him. I wonder how his friends are going to save him. And we're like, I don't think that's... Yeah, but... And then Sierra's like, yeah, but, you know, Jesus is very powerful. He's got powerful... So do you think he's going to use his powers? Because that's how, you know, powers. Like, this is the... We're in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is where we live and breathe now and have our being. Is he going to use his powers? No, I don't think he's going to use his powers, you know. And then finally, I think this is probably going to be my Easter sermon if I can figure out how to make it work. But Maya goes, well, Jesus is going to die, so I guess he's not going to be in any more stories. he's not going to be in any more stories because he's going to die. And so I'm really carrying that. Like, what does that mean? I mean, like that is how it works, right? Like, this character dies, or this person dies, and now they're no longer at the family dinner, right? So, like, this is logical. Like, I get it, right? And so I guess that person's not going to be in any more stories. And of course, next week we'll do there's a couple of, you know, Sunday school stories about the resurrection appearances, and so he's going to show up in some more stories, but I wonder how to make sense of that. And so anyway, that's how I've been working through the Holy Week stories, is with little children's sermon dialogues that no one else gets to witness.
Did the change happen, Matt? Because clearly, right, like we've had some conversations about this, right? Like, dinosaur, we like dinosaurs. This is a pro-dinosaur podcast. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about, the Land Before Time, actually super sad.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you're, like, excited to show it to your kids, and they're like, whoa, this is a sad one. Velveteen Rabbit, super sad. You know, lots of the classics are sad. I really enjoyed, there's this TikTok account where this woman takes apart, like, nursery rhymes and stuff and explains the, like, really horrible, sinister, like, origins of them. But the stories seem to be, right, like, that, like, well, I wonder how the friends will save them, because the friends always save them.
No, there's, I mean, it's journeying throughout, like, we went through these 12 Old Testament stories, and there's so much, like, I mean, even in the Sunday school tellings of them, and I think the Holy Moly series actually is quite good at, like, the way that they just tell the story and leave plenty of space, you know, for kind of dwelling in it, but just there is deep sadness of, like, here's Abraham and Sarah longing for a child, right? And there's just, like, this sense of, like, these are not, like, you know, the little 5-minute
Cinderella
stories.
All those kids' stories about
that
infertility.
They prefer. Yeah. But I have to say, like, I do, I'm grateful for it. And not even in a theoretical way, like, having just gone through a year where, like, multiple times in the same year, we had to tell them that someone in their family that they knew well died. You know, the fact that here these stories are, like, recognizing that we have open conversations in our family with our 4-year-olds about death. And we need to. Like, I'm actually grateful for that. I know I've talked to parents that, like, you know, get frustrated that, like, oh, these Disney stories, always the parents die, or, like, we have to, like, some, oh, it's all going to be fine. Like, you want to kind of shield your kids from those things. And I don't know. You can't, right? At a certain point, you can't. And so I'm grateful that these stories, and in some ways, I'm grateful that the stories, like, I mean, this is what we always talk about, right? Like, this is why we have this faith. Like, it's supposed to call a thing what it is and be relevant to the lives that we actually live. But you know, it's amazing to experience that with 4-year-olds. So that's what I got for Holy Week this year.
That's your Holy Week
walking through the story, just, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. God bless you, preachers who are doing Holy Week this year. I can't imagine. Like,
yeah.
Because this is the week when we would have done, like, we did the Triduum project last year. Have we had this conversation before? Because it's a pretty common pastor conversation to be on the pastor nerd side of thing. We can get so hype for the 3 days that we think a lot about it. We do a ton of prep, try to think of interesting ways to do Monday, Thursday, and Good Friday. And then, you know, you roll out the basketballs on Thursday and 12 people show up. And it's one of those things where you're like confronted with like, oh, I'm the only person who cares about this.
Right.
I sincerely wonder how that changes a year in the second time you do it online, via Zoom. What are y'all doing?
Still trying to figure that out. I mean, it's just, it feels like it's, you'd think, like if I was writing the story, I'd be like, yeah, I'm really good at this by now. But in fact, I feel like it all starts to weigh on you and pile up. And so you're just kind of keeping your head above water. And I think that's kind of how it is, you know? Ash Wednesday, we had triple the turnout that we had last year. And so I don't know what all accounted for that. I don't know that it'll be the same for Holy Week Online, but folks were hungry to gather. So we'll see how it works. I've got an interactive liturgy for Good Friday from a Sanctified Art, who I also like to promote, even though we still need them as a sponsor, if you're listening.
Come on the pod, Sarah. Quit ducking us.
I mean, and then for the Easter Vigil, over the last several months, Tyra and I and some of the youth directors have been organizing youth from across the state of California, and they're gonna join St. Mark's youth for an Easter Vigil, and they all sort of picked a story to tell, and they're gonna tell that in a live Zoom Facebook live broadcast. And so we'll see how that goes. But many of them didn't know what an Easter Vigil was, so I got to get all geeky about it, and I hope they got a kick out of that. And then even these stories, like I just, again, like it's sometimes it's just telling the story, and that's one of the things I really appreciate about the vigil. Is that not everyone does know these stories, and at some point you have to tell them, and it's a great opportunity to learn them, tell them, have fun with them. So, on all of that note, we come finally to Easter, and I'll say, like, this, like, Holy Week was different last year because I just promoted the Triduum Project. It got me out of having to do anything else. But this is the second Easter that we'll have on Zoom. I know that a number of other churches are going to meet again for Easter. They're going to meet in person. And my church was like, I said, I think we should wait till June. And they were like, nah, that seems pretty ambitious. So we'll see when we actually meet. But definitely not for
Easter. So many jealous listeners right now.
So we'll be... I don't know. I can't. It's hard to make sense of it. There's some pastors that just seem so excited. And I am excited eventually. I just, like, this kind of weird hybrid thing we're going to go back to just makes my brain
hurt. It's as if the in-between stuff is really hard.
It's really hard. So, anyway. So just, you know, again, like...
The space between. Some people might say it.
Some people name...
The summer of Dave Matthews is coming up. Summer of 2021, guys. Get hype.
Incredible. Incredible. Coming up on the second Easter of trying to preach an Easter sermon online. And it is not... how to preach good news in the midst of this. And I don't, I'm a person that does, it's not even that I think I don't even think it's like, I mean, we've had this debate on the pod before, but like, I don't have this binary where I think like, if we were in person, everything would be perfect. And because we're online, like that's the bad thing. I think all the bad thing is like all the stuff that we've been talking about, right? Mm-hmm. All the grief that continues to be in the world, and the fact that it's so challenging for us to address it. It's much deeper than online versus in person. It's like, it's all of this other stuff that we've talked about too. And how we don't seem to have the tools, like you said, like our best tools are not available to us to address those very real violence and death and grief. And I think we're all still carrying that walking into Easter.
So it's like the most,
what do we do?
The most fundamental, Matt, I've got some spoilers for you here. I'm going to be I'm really just prepared to be the person who digs the hole this week. And you got to get us out of it. But like the most rudimentary of like pastoral care skills that you get taught in the seminary process is when you do that CPE and the same, it's at the same level of like, I'm guessing when you go to like learn to be a therapist, you get taught to ask the question, what does that say about your relationship with your mother? The CPE group processing question is like, and are you are you comfortable with silence? Are you like, it's this like test of like, or how comfortable are you in a room with people and just like stand there, sit there and be right? Like, and the big like lesson of it is that like, you don't have to like send your presence, like just being with people. Is really important.
Yep.
You can't do it. Can't do the most basic, like... I get all the caveats to that, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Just... to do the complete Wizard of Oz thing, where you're like, my best pastoral care skills are just, like, physically putting my body in the same room as other people. That's all I got.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I mean, here's an idea. Here's a crazy idea. Call me crazy. What if we love the vigil, Matt? I mean, I think so. There's some history here. Listeners maybe know it, right? The it's still a vigil. Vigilize the Easter Sunday more than we have in the past. You know, that sort of waiting, because that's where my good news is going to be here this week, Matt. I am pro Mark, because Mark, I think, is the best literary version of the gospel, right? Because it's a cohesive whole, it fits together nicely. And the thing that is really badass about Mark is you get that first line at the very beginning of Mark that says, the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, which, I mean, really, it's HBO worthy that, like, it's lost sort of thing, like, oh, do you mean like this is the beginning of the story? This whole story is just the beginning. And then you, boom, have the expanded universe that goes from there.
It feels like it should be like the Star Wars opening scene where it's like in the blue text and it says mm-hmm. a long time going out. It should just say like the beginning of the goodness of Jesus. And it's just in blue text. And then you go.
Yeah. This is it. And then the ending is fantastic because the resurrected Jesus does not appear. And if you've heard me preach on Easter before and you've listened to all of our Easter podcasts before, that's a thing that I like about Easter is that Jesus isn't there sometimes. And especially in Mark, you can get the modified endings. Is this like the asterisked ending or is there more after this?
There's more.
The addendum?
You mean the added later part? Yeah, there's more in the added later part.
So I think this is the end, and I like this as the end, not...
Yeah.
The shorter ending of Mark, the longer ending of Mark. Because it's just the story ends, and Jesus isn't there. He's gone on ahead of you. And so there is this, like, future tense that the good news is here, but it's not fully realized. You know, it's happened, it's here. The tomb is empty. But that doesn't solve all of your problems. And guess what? For me this year, that's really important to me because I'm guessing that Easter Sunday is not going to solve all the problems that we've got going on right now.
Yeah.
It just pulls you, if I may, further into the mystery, into the mystagogy.
Building a mystery, Sarah McLachlan?
Building a mystery. One adopted dog at a time.
Incredible. That's right. It does feel like the appropriate gospel for this year. And there are promises, you know, there's a promise embedded within it. I mean, what does it mean to be Like, who are you in this text? So there's this promise from the young man in the white robe. It feels like that's the good news, mm-hmm. but the response to it is interesting. Like, there is, maybe that's the first time I've read it that way, where, like, there's this proclamation of good news. Like, he's giving a proclamation. Like, this is the good news. And then the response from the congregation is
terror and amazement. They said nothing to any... Right, so...
I hope that's a response to my sermon on Easter Sunday, that there's just terror and amazement. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid.
Right, so the other, like... piece of Mark's literature that's really good here is that you get the white robe, the streaker. Oh, yes, they call him the streak. We should put that on the playlist. Who says, don't be alarmed. You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. which, again, I think should be, we've got this whole, like, Christ is risen, Christ is risen indeed, or he is risen indeed. I think it should be expanded to say, Christ is risen, and the congregation should say, Christ is not here.
He is not here, yeah.
Which is complex. Like, it's this super simple, like, statement.
Yeah.
It's what a statement of faith it is, you know, right? Not just, like, he is raised. He is not here. But then yeah. he gives this, he gives instructions, right? Really simple stuff. Go tell the disciples and Peter that he's going ahead of you to Galilee, and there you will see him just as he told you. And so they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Period. End of book. And the way that gets presented, right, is here's the beginning of the good news. Nobody told anyone. But how did you, like, it really, it pushes you into the mystery, right? Who wrote this down? Like, who? And presumably, like, you're hearing it as an oral, like, as a story told around the fire. How did you hear the story? Like, who told you? Right. Somebody must have told somebody. How did this? It's kind of got some Blair Witch-ish qualities to it. Right. Have we talked about Blair Witch before?
I don't know if we have.
Kids these days, they'll never appreciate it, right? So Blair Witch Project comes out, which was a horror movie. I'm not a horror movie person, but word on the street was, again, this is pre-internet. This is just found footage that they turned into a movie, right? So we go and we watch it, and we all believe it's real. Like, they don't say, like, oh no, this is just a movie and this is how they shot it and stuff, right? The internet hardly exists. We had no idea. No, how are we going to know that this is, like, not actually found footage, right? So we just believed it, that this is, like, here's this thing. They found this tapes. Nobody know what happened to the people. And I couldn't sleep. And I slept in my bedroom, was in the basement. And I could not sleep in the basement for several months. Because it was a little too... Yeah. But that sort of, like, oral, like, everybody told me this is real. How would I not know that this is not, like...
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, yeah, no, we'd never seen any kind of, we hadn't seen storytelling like that before. And maybe that's true here too. I mean, we haven't seen storytelling. Like, the kind of storytelling that the Gospel of Mark sets up is this, like, you know, they're playing with these royal images and doing this really subversive way. And so this also seems like a really subversive ending to end like this. I'm amazed by, like... I don't know that I've noticed this either. I mean, it's so nuts. I've read this so many different times. But they're, you know, when they arrive at the tomb, they're asking each other, who will roll away the stone for us at the entrance to the tomb? And it's the wrong question, because that stone has already been rolled back. Mm. I wonder how often we're, like, wrestling with this question that's already been... That problem's already been solved. Like, when I'm... I mean, for real, right? Like, that, like, this is, like, I don't know. I just, I think that's really, and yet it's not like the work is just done. Like, then this person calls them to a new thing. Go and find him. Go and tell the others. Here are your actual marching orders. And then it ends with, you know, they've got work to do. And I know that we don't want that to be good news to tell people what to do. But the idea that the story continues, the idea that the path before us continues, maybe is good news.
I think that is the good news. I've started going back. I'm re-watching Scrubs which again is a pre-internet show. You can get it on Hulu, though it doesn't have all, they didn't get all the music rights for streaming because streaming wasn't yet a thing, and they have such killer music. You don't always, they have got some substitute music, but I've been going back and rewatching Scrubs because for a number of reasons, Zach Braff and Donald Faison have started a podcast during the pandemic where they're going episode by episode through rewatching the show themselves. Number two, because you, Adam, and I watched Scrubs a whole lot. We would get the Netflix disc in the mail room at LSDC and watch it. And one of the first couple episodes is when JD, who's Zach Braff, you know, he's a new doctor, he's a resident. And he has this kid who's smoking like three packs of cigarettes a day, who's got they're afraid will have lung cancer, and he's really trying to reach him to convince him to stop smoking because he turns out he doesn't have lung cancer, and it's just really bothering him that he can't like reach this guy to get him to like stop. He feels like he did, and then he catches him outside smoking cigarettes, and so he's building this relationship with Dr. Cox, and he goes to Dr. Cox's house, his apartment afterwards to be like, hey, let's talk this through, come up with a game plan so we can reach this guy. And Dr. Cox, this is backed up with an episode where like they have like three patients. This is one of the episodes. They have three patients and one of them dies. And it's the first time a patient dies on Scrubs, which is an important part of the show because Scrubs, if you didn't know, pays incredible amounts of attention to like the actual medical details, and it is really accurate. It was the first show where surgeons wore a mask during surgery. which is amazing. But Dr. Cox is like, your job as a doctor is not to save everybody. You can't do that. It's not a sustainable way. Our job, like all the patients you see will die. Your job is to help them not die today. And our goal, an attainable goal, is just to keep, you know, to use a sports metaphor, to keep the game alive, to keep it going. And to loop back around to like, was it Sierra, who said, you know, well, Jesus is done now as a character. That's the good news. The good news is the game continues. It's not over yet.
Yeah.
There's another day. It doesn't have to solve everything, because if it does, it's not going to be Scrubs. It's going to be really unsatisfactory. Like, we tied up all the loose ends miraculously through this gadget, the sci-fi gadget we invented that solves all of our problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's enough for the good news to be, there's a new day.
Yeah. Amen.
Gosh, Scrubs is so good, man.
That's your real good news.
He does the thing, and it's so good to watch the podcast, to listen to the podcast while you watch it, because they're like talking about like the, all the things you like noticed but didn't really like notice. It's like it's really easy. One of the things we really exploited was how easy it was to do like the inner monologue thing, to set up a joke you did with the like external monologue. And it's in like the second episode where Turk is walking away, and JD's like inner monologue is like, tell him you love him, but not in a super feminine way this time. And then he says, sometimes I miss you so much it hurts.
Incredible. I really look forward to the day when we do our podcast about this podcast.
Oh man, that's going to be great. It's going to be great.
And in the meantime, what do we listen to?
Matt, I've got a song for each of the 3 days to get you through Holy Week. On Thursday, I'm going to put on the playlist a John Prine song cover by Brandi Carlile. She recorded the cover right after John Prine died. You could see an excellent performance of it on Colbert that night. But I Remember Everything, which I think is the kind of song that, like, if Scrubs were to produce Holy Week, it'd be playing during the Last Supper while Jesus is gathering folks together.
Yeah.
Because it's a song about love and beauty and the tragicness of, and the finitude of all of that. There you go. Mm-hmm. Then on Friday night, Matt, I'm going to put, you're not going to believe this, under a really heavy, super terrible week. I've been listening to a lot of Phoebe Bridgers, and I've put it on a playlist before, but I'm putting Garden Song on, so that as you're reading the story about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, you might play Garden Song, which, by the way, I watched the video again today, and the video is so good. And I commend the video to you. It's Phoebe in like a bedroom, and it starts Do you know it, Matt? She has a bong and like takes like a big rip off the bong at the beginning, and then like slowly the room like fills with smoke like throughout the song, and so it's this like smoky like altered reality. Like immediately after she like, so she takes the rip, the lights flicker, it's smoky and it's a little fuzzy, and then like a black hooded figure comes and sits on the bed behind her, like the, and he's there throughout the show, throughout the song. And so it takes like the garden is this, I think it works really well, right? Like it's this other, if you want to think of the garden, is this like smoky, like what is going on? Like it's super heavy, but also like this just like cloudiness to what's happening. And then on Saturday, somebody who I hadn't heard from in a while, I actually looked them up to see if they'd had anything just a couple weeks ago, and they hadn't done anything in years. Ingrid Michaelson, who had some of those like really poppy hooky stuff, has a new single out with Zayn, formerly of One Direction, I learned this week today.
Yes.
And this song they've done, I think, for in particular for the kind of end of this year of pandemic, what we hope is a year of pandemic. But also I think it's a good news statement that I believe this year. And it's called To Begin Again. And that's the good news. You get to start over again. Maybe that's not the good news we always want, but it's good enough good news.
Amen. Amen. Good songs. Speaking of Zayn and One Direction, making me think of pop music. Did you know Justin Bieber put out an album? I believe last week. It's called Justice. It begins with a sample from Martin Luther King Jr. And he shows up again halfway through the album. I don't believe any of the songs are actually about social justice, but I guess he's now supporting the Poor People's Campaign. I don't know. But there is a song with Chance called Holy.
All right.
That I did hear in the context of a worship service recently. So I don't know. We may have to break this down, but it's something else. Something else there.
I have to check that one out for next week.
Instead, here's what I've got. I've been listening to, I've been revisiting Tom Petty's Wildflowers album lately, which is another good one about, like, I don't know, finitude, and I don't know, just has the kind of vibe that feels like it fits these days. And so a song that I've returned to again and again is Time to Move On, which is off of that album. And it's one of these songs where the music just fits the lyrics. Like, it's got this kind of boom chicka train moving kind of sound that fits the words of time to move on, time to get going. What lies ahead, I have no way of knowing, but under my feet, maybe the grass is growing. Time to move on, time to get going. I didn't have that written down. I know that song so well.
Right.
And then Friday, Ain't No Grave. There's a Johnny Cash version of this song that just sounds very late career Johnny Cash. But there's also a band called Crooked Still that I somehow discovered on Spotify, and I really like that version of Ain't No Grave. And then on Saturday, let's go with Wilson Pickett's Don't Let the Green Grass Fool You.
Mm.
And maybe that ties a little bit more to John's Easter Gospel in the garden with some misdirection going on.
That is a great phrase, but, supposing him to be the gardener.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. But let Wilson Pickett's voice be your Easter Gospel. That's what I got.
I like it, Matt. Can't wait to check out Justin Bieber's pop album. Justice album, excuse me.
Well, it's been real.
Gun violence is bullshit.